2. Tananarive Bailey looked back, face lined, sweat dripping from her nose. Nobody behind her now. She was the last, almost keeping up. Her injuries had healed moderately well, and she no longer limped, but gnawing fatigue had set in. She was slowing, her breath rasped, and her throat burned, and she was nearly out of water. It had been a wearing, sweaty trip through the maze she thought of as backstage. The labyrinth that formed the back of the bull's mirror shell was intricate and plainly never intended for anybody but workers to move through. No comfort such as passageways. Poor lighting. Twisty lanes a human could barely crawl through. This layer underpinning the bull was the bigger part of the whole vast structure, nearly an astronomical unit across, but only a few meters thick. It was all machinery, stanchions, and cables. Control of the mirrors on the surface above demanded layers of intricate wiring and mechanical buffers, plus the route twisted in three dimensions. Tananarive was sweating, and her arms ached. She couldn't match the jumping style of her companions in 18% gravity without a painful clicking in her hip and ribs. Her pace was a gliding run, sometimes bounding off an obstructing wall, sometimes taking it on her butt, all assisted by her hands. It demanded a kind of slithering grace she lacked. Beth, Lao Pin, Mayra, and Fred were ahead of her. She paused, clinging to a buttress shaft. She needed rest, time, but there was none of that here. For a moment she let the whole world slide away and just relaxed, as well as she could. These moments came seldom, but she longed for them. She sighed and let go. Earth came to her then. The quiet, leafy air of her childhood, in evergreen forests where she hiked with her mother and father, her careless laughter sinking into the vastness of the lofty trees. Her heart was still back there, in the rich loam of deep forests, fragrant and solemn in the cathedral redwoods and spruce. Even in recalling it all, she knew it had vanished on the tides of time. Her parents were dead for centuries now, surely, despite the longevity treatments. But the memories swarmed up into her as she relaxed for just a long, lingering moment. Her moment of peace drained away. She had to get back to running. In the dim light, she could barely make out the finger snakes flickering ahead of the long, striding humans. They had an amazingly quick wriggle. Probably they'd been adapted through evolution to do repairs in the bull's understory. Beth had gotten fragments of their history out of the snakes, but the translation was shaky. They'd been here on the bull so long, their own origins were legends about a strange, mythical place where a round white sun could set to reveal black night. "Beth," Tananarive sent over short-range comm, "I'm kinda... I... need a rest." "We all do," came the crisp reply. Beth turned up ahead and looked back at her, too far away to read an expression. "Next break in 5 minutes. Here I come." She clamped down her jaw and took a ragged breath. Their target was an automated cargo drone. The snakes had told of these, and now the bulkheads and struts they passed were pitched forward, suggested they were getting close. Up ahead, as she labored on, she could see it emerge, one in a line of identical flat-bellied cylinders. Tananarive could see the outline of a great oyster-colored curved hatch in its side, and... was that... yes! Stars beyond a window wall. She felt elation slice through her fatigue, but now the hip injury had slowed her to a limping walk. Without the finger snakes, this plan would have been impossible. She limped up to the rest of them, her mouth already puckering at the imagined taste of water. The three snakes were decorated in camouflage colors, browns and mottled blacks, the patterns almost the same, but Tananarive had learned to tell them apart. They amassed a bit more than any of the humans, and looked like snakes whose tails had split into four arms, each tipped with a claw. Meaty things, muscular, slick-skinned. They wore long cloth tubes as backpacks, anchored on their rigid hides. Beth's team had first seen finger snakes while escaping from the garden of their imprisonment. Tananarive surprised a nest of them, and they fled down into deep jungle, carrying some cargo in a sling. The snakes were a passing oddity, apparently intelligent to a degree. Her photos of them were intriguing. Now it was clear the finger snakes must have tracked and observed their party ever since. When Fred led the humans to an alien computer facility, they were not in evidence. Fred had found a way to make the computer teach them the bird folk language. Among his many talents, Fred was a language speed learner. He got the quasi-linear logic and syntax down in less than a day. Once he had built a vocabulary, his learning rate increased. A few more days and he was fluent. The whole team carried sleep learning, so they used a slip transfer from Fred's. By then, he had been somehow practicing by himself, so it was best that he got to talk to the snakes first. They just showed up. No diplomacy or signposting. Typical snake character. Do, don't retreat into symbols or talk. When the finger snakes crawled through the door, somehow defeating Lao Pin's lock, Fred said hello, and no more. He wasn't exactly talkative either. Except, as he often rejoined, when he actually had something important to say. So, after his hello and a spurt of snake in reply, Tananarev was able to yell at them. Give you honor! We are lost! Five snakes formed a hoop, which turned out to be a sign of fruitful endeavor commencing. Tananarev made a hand gesture she had somehow gotten from the slip transfer. This provoked another symbol, plus talk. Formal snake protocol moved from gestures and signs into the denser thicket of language. Luckily, the highest form of snake speech was a modified birdfolk structure that stressed lean and of sinew as virtues. So their knotted phrases did convey meaning in transparent, staccato rhythms. The finger snakes were rebels, or something like it, as nearly as Tananarev could untangle from the cross associations that slithered through snake speech. Curious, also. Humans were obviously new to their world, and therefore they began tracking the human band in an orderly, quiet way shaped by tradition. The snakes worked for others, but retained a fierce independence. Knowledge was their strong suit, plus the ability to use tools of adroit shape and use. They went everywhere in the bowl, they said, on engineering jobs. Especially they maintained the meters-thick layers between the life zone and the hard hull. In a sense, they maintained the boundary that separated the uncountable living billions from the killing vacuum that waited a short distance away. The snakes wanted to know everything they could not discover by their intricate tracking and watching. They knew the basic primate architecture, for their tapering arms used a cantilevered frame that bore a warped resemblance to the human shoulder. This, plus a million more matters, flew through their darting conversations. Snakes thought oddly. Culture, biology, singing, and food all seemed bound up in a big ball of context, hard to unravel. But when something important struck them, they acted, while humans were still talking. When it was clear that humans would die if they stayed at low gravity for too long, the finger snakes led them here, to a garage for magnetically driven space vehicles. Snake teams did the repairs here. One of the finger snakes, Thistler, she thought, clicked open a recessed panel in the drone, so the ceramic cowling eased down. Thistler set to work, curling head to tail so his eyes could watch his nail-tipped fingers work. The wiry body flexed like cable. Foshtha turned away from him, on guard. Tananarev was still guessing at genders, but there were behavior cues. The male always seemed to have a tool in hand, and the females were wary in new surroundings. Thistler was male. Foshtha and Shturk were female. Foshtha's head dipped and curled as she turned around, seeking danger. Shturk wasn't visible. She must be on guard. Tananarev sensed no obvious threats, barring perhaps a whistling just at the edge of her hearing. Foshtha wriggled to meet her.
Thistler knows computer speak, she said. King of computers equals persons. Will write dress program for us quick. Person comp adept. She is. Are you sick?
Was injured, Tananarev said. Not sick. Am healing.
Both spoke in bird talk, its trills and rolled vowels chiming like a song.
Is well, we know.
The curved side of the cargo drone slid up with a high metallic whine, green, verdant wealth. The drone was filled, jammed, with vegetation. Live plants standing forth in trays, rich hanging streamers. Lights in the curved ceilings glared like suns. Thistler continued to work, and suddenly trays were sliding out and falling. Half the trays had piled up on the deck when it stopped.
"Keep some plants, air for us while we travel,"
Foshtha said. She wriggled away. Lao Pin jog-hopped in the light grav, springing over to help Tananarive.
"You okay? Shall I carry you?"
"I'm fine. What's that whistling?"
It was loud, and now had a low rumble to it.
"We need to get aboard,"
Lao Pin said, glancing around at the snake teams at work.
"Quick!"
He tried pulling her along by her belt, desisted when he saw her pain. Tananarive walked over to a copper-hued wall, leaning against its warmth. The finger snakes chattered in their jittering bursts and oozed across the platforms with wriggling grace. She studied them amid the noise and let herself go. She was back in the leafy wealth she had grown up in, and, yes, knew she would never see it again. She allowed her head to tilt back and felt her spine kink and lapse as it straightened and eased. Amid metal and ceramics, she thought of Green. This odd construction they were moving through, a weird place bigger than planets, had its own version of Green Paradise, and was the only reason she had survived in it. The vast, strange canopies with their chittering airborne creatures, the stretching grasslands and zigzag trees. Animals so odd, they threw her back into her basic biology. They were all natural in some way, yet not. Someone had designed their setting, if not their species. Those sprawling lands of the bowl had been tolerable. These mechanical labyrinths below the bowl's life sphere were not. She had seen quite enough, thank you, of the motorized majesty that made such a vast rotating artifact. Rest. That was her need now. She had to descend into blissful sleep, consigned to her unconscious the labors of processing so much strangeness. She let go slowly, head lapsing back. Easing was not easy, but she let herself descend into it, for just a moment before she would get up again and stride off, full of purpose and letting no soft moments play through her. Just for a while.
"Looks like the male is finished playing with the controls,"
Lao Pin called. Dimly she sensed the snakes moving by her. Thistler wriggled into the hold, then Foshtha and Shtirk. Tananarive came out of her blissful retreat, slowly. The voices echoed odd and hollow around her. Lead infected her legs. They would not move without great strain. She made herself get unsteadily up onto two uncertain feet. Clouds in her mind dispelled slowly. Something about green wealth, forests of quiet majesty, her parents. She made her chin snap up, eyes fluttering, back on duty, and slowly turned to survey the area.
"Where's Beth?"
Clouds still grasped at her.
"Breathe deeply, keep it up."
Tananarive strode off to check around some angular buttress supports. No human about. The snakes had crawled into the ship, fitting somehow into open spaces. Lao Pin jogged to join them. He glanced back at her, waved a hand, turned, went away. Still there were clouds. She listened intently as she tried to put one small foot in front of the other. Remarkably difficult it was. Rumbling, sharp whistling, chatter. Tananarive walked a bit unsteadily back toward the ship. Her vision was blurred, sweat trickling into her eyes and stinging. The great curved door closed in Tananarive's face.
"Hey,"
Tananarive said. She stopped, blinked. Clouds swept away on a sudden adrenaline shock.
"Wait!"
The drone slid out of line and away, slow at first, then faster and faster.
"Damn it!"
she shouted.
"Damn!"
She couldn't hear herself over a whistling roar. Hot air blasted her back.
"Wait!"
Beth Marble shouted. She could feel the acceleration building. The finger snakes were wrapped around support pillars, and her crew were grabbing for tie-downs. She found handholds and footholds while thrust pulled massively at her. She wailed.
"Tananarive!"
"She was sick,"
Foshtha said, recessed eyes glittering.
"Thrust would have killed her. She would have slowed us."
"What? You let—"
Beth stopped. It was done. Handle the debriefing later in calmer moments. The snakes were useful, but strange. They were accelerating quickly, and she found a wedge-shaped seat. Not ideal for humans, but manageable. There was little noise from the magnetics, but the entire length of the drone popped and ponged as stresses adjusted. Lao Pin said,
I have Sunseeker online.
Send Red Wing our course. Talk to him.
Beth couldn't move. She was barely hanging on to a tie-down bar.
Use our best previous coordinates.
Okay. I'm having it compute from the present force vectors.
Lao Pin turned up the volume so others could hear.
Lao Pin here. Jampud Vipa here. Bridge Petty Officer. Captain Red Wing's got some kind of cold, and Ayana Lee is bridge pilot. What's your situation? We're on our way. It went pretty much as we'd planned. Hardly anything around on the way but finger snakes. We've got three with us. We lost Tananarive Bailey. Drown it, the officer said. All right. But you're en route? Hello, I see your course. Yeah. Wow. You're right up against the back of the mirror shell. Jampudvipa, this drone is driven by magnets in the back of the ball. Most of their ships and trains operate that way, we think. It must save reaction fuel. We don't have much choice.
Some microwave noise blurred the signal then.
Call me Jam. And you don't have pressure suits? No. And there's no airlock. No way to mate the ships.
A pause.
Well, Ion says she can get Sunseeker to the rendezvous in 10 hours. After that... What? Stet. Lao Pin, we can maybe fit you into the bay that held Eros before we lost it. If not...
Lao Pin said,
The finger snakes don't keep time our way. I think it's longer for us. I'll make regular checks and send them. We'll be there. And you all need medical assistance? 4 months in low gravity out in the field. Yeah. We'll have Captain Red Wing out of the infirmary by then, but it only holds 2. Pick your sickest. Would have been Tananarive.
The drone was gone. The system's magnetic safety grapplers released with a hiss. Tananarive stood in the sudden silence, stunned. A high hiss sounded from a nearby track. She turned to find a snake to stop the drone, call it somehow, and saw no snakes at all. The three had boarded the drone. Now the shrill hiss was worse. She stepped back from the rising noise, and an alien ship came rushing toward the platform from a descending tube. It was not magnetic. It moved on jets. Tananarive looked around, wondering where to run. The ship had a narrow, transparent face, and through it she could see the pilot, a spindly brown-skinned creature in a uniform. It looked not much bigger than she was, and the tubular ship it guided was enormous, flaring out behind the pilot's cabin. The ship eased in alongside the main platform, jetting cottony steam. Tananarive wondered what she should do. Hide? Flee? Try to talk to... Then, behind huge windows in the ship's flank, she saw a tremendous feathered shape peering out at her, and recognized it. Quick flashing eyes, the great head swiveling to take in all around it, with a twisted cant to its heavy neck. She gasped. Memor.